Rock and roll. We got another Build Your Legacy presentation. We got a really awesome guest here today, Maurice Philogene, ready to get interviewed and drilled by Andy McMullen and myself. This is going to be a blast. we're going to have a lot of fun here today. Welcome, man. How you doing, Maurice? Welcome, everybody.
I'm chilling. I'm doing good, man. It's good to see you again after all this time.
I know, man. We got a lot of catching up to do. Welcome, everybody, once again. Maurice, why don't we start with a little bit about your background? Tell us a little bit. So I recently heard, I think, that you were a military corporal. Is that correct?
No, a colonel. Lieutenant colonel, yeah.
Lieutenant colonel. So my dad was a colonel, too, and that's why it kind of rang a bell. Because you just recently got interviewed, I think, on some kind of national program or whatnot. I saw some posts on LinkedIn.
Oh, you saw that, yeah. Good friend of mine, who I think is on here. I think I saw her face a second
Nicole,
ago.
Right?
Nicole. Hi,
hey,
Nicole.
Thanks for joining us.
That's my homegirl now.
Oh, cool.
But Nicole runs Emilio Productions, and she's incredibly astute at bringing military veterans' concerns and journeys to the big screen. She has a couple of documentaries that are all over Netflix and Hulu and everywhere. And she gave me the opportunity to speak on her next documentary called Resilience, about the hidden wounds of people who served in the military. And it was my pleasure to be part of it.
Sweet. We'll dive into that, but tell the audience a little bit about your background, how you got this, you know, financial freedom thing and purchasing multifamily properties in bulk and very large scale deals and whatnot.
Yeah, man. You said the right thing first. It's financial freedom. It was time freedom. It was, how am I going to be able to exist on this planet and not be beholden to being somewhere every single day? So my journey kind of started when I was 15, because I started traveling. My pops was very smart, took me out the inner city and sent me to France to roll around with an exchange student who had stayed with me the year before. This is 1990, so I'm dating myself. That trip when I was 15 showed me that the world was more than the office, more than running the streets of Boston, more than just playing football. You could do a lot of different things all over the place, but I realized we need money for that. And when I was 21, I found Personal Finance for Dummies, which had a passage on passive income, which then led me to real estate in my early 20s. I started in single family homes, got up to 35 of them, paid off 18 of them. By the time I was 36 or 37 in 2014, I had 160 grand of passive income coming in. True to form, when you have enough money to cover your basic needs, you quickly start to realize that life was never about money in the first place. I needed a new challenge. Multifamily presented itself. I have philanthropy and life-related goals that require a lot of capital. So I'm very happy to do multifamily, not just for my own goals, but to help people achieve financial freedom much faster than I did. And that's where the big multifamily stuff comes in. And I started Quattro Capital, as you know, Ruben, and we are rocking and rolling to the tune of maybe $200 million in real estate in the last 3 years or so. But of course, I do other stuff outside of Quattro Capital as well.
So Maurice, I got to ask you, Ruben, and this is the perfect time to ask this question. So I was talking with my kid the other day, and I was trying to get him to help me with this editing on video, right? And because he's a whiz at this, and I needed it for this basketball team I'm coaching. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to give you some money for it. And he's like, I don't care about money. I was like, that's because you have it, right? That's because you have it. You don't know what that struggle is like. So you, as Maurice Philogene, now travels the world, has passive income. How do you handle that with your kids?
That's a good question. And to be clear, I've been traveling since I was 15. I never stopped and I did not have money. I have money now that I'm 47 because I worked my butt off to get it, to maintain it and to multiply it. But I didn't have it back in the day. But when it comes to my kids, my kids know the rules. They know they're not getting my shit at all, because they are responsible for two things in life. My kids are responsible for, one, learning how to make money grow. That is a fundamental skill that, especially in my hood, in my neighborhood where I grew up, like, it was never talked about. What was always talked about was getting a good career or playing ball in the NFL or in the NBA. No one ever talked about how to make money grow. That is a skill set that is required in my house. That's the first thing. The second skill set is being happy. That's all I require my babies to do. And by babies, I mean, one is 23 and one is 9 years old. We do travel the world a lot. I do encourage them to, one of the reasons why I travel so much, I was talking to Nicole about this the other day, is for constant learning. Travel is not about, to me, travel is not about going around. Like, I don't want to see every country in the world. I've seen 97 countries 350 times, but I'm not doing it to see everything. I'm doing it to go experience and build relationships with incredible people such that when my time is up on this planet, my life book is full. That's the purpose of it. So I talk to my kids about it all the time. They know that to do that, it doesn't require sitting in an office from age 21 to 65. It requires learning how to make money grow. It's not what you make, it's what you keep and multiply. So that's what my kids get from me on a daily basis.
Now, are they learning languages? Are you learning languages? How does that affect the brain? Tell us a little bit about the learning capacity of.
Man, I'm a language speaker, brother. My family's Haitian.
Oh, cool.
You just caught me, Ruben. Now your story's coming back to me, brother.
I speak Spanish and Portuguese, and I studied a little bit of German,
I think your wife, French. My wife
is from Acapulco.
That's it. That's it. I remember. My family's Haitian, so I'm a French speaker. I grew up speaking French and Creole in the house, and somewhere around age 6 or 7, I dropped the accent, and nobody knows me from Adam now. I just sound like a regular American. I picked up Portuguese along the way because I dated someone from Brazil, and as a romantic language speaker, you just pick it up. So I speak 4 languages. Language is a requirement in my family as well, because what language does, first of all, it allows you to access different parts of the world in a meaningful way. You can actually shoot the shit with people, which is really, really important and adds credibility. But secondly, it just forces your brain to do different things. So every time I land in Beirut, I'm there all the time, and Lebanon is a former French colony, my brain flips from English to French. I just operate different. You experience life different. You connect with people different. That's why I love language so much. Even the language of money is different, right? Like, we have the ability to talk about real estate and raising capital and things of that nature. It's a language in and of itself.
Yeah, I'm actually reading a book by Joe Dispenza in Spanish with my wife. We've been reading lately. I think it's called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, or in Spanish, Dejar de Ser Tú, or something like that. It's pretty crazy, you know, reading it in a different language and you process it differently. It's been a lot of
That's
fun,
it.
Man.
That's it. My little one's in Spanish immersion school. So
we got lots of real estate and financial freedom stuff to cover. However, I want to talk about this concept of being a citizen of the world. Tell me, what does that mean?
It means that you have understanding, empathy, and gratitude that the world is not just about Washington, D.C. or the United States or any other place for that matter. I call myself a global citizen. I want to be one. If I was insular, I'd still be living on the streets of Boston from back in the day. I think that people miss the boat, and I'm gonna call out my own country, my beautiful United States of America, which I love so much, which has given me so much opportunity, but 95% of the people in this country do not have a passport. That's insane.
That's crazy.
That's insane. 370 million people and only 5% of us have passports.
Wow.
Do you know what experiences I've had in Arctic Finland 5 times, or in Sweden 10 times, in Lebanon 30 times, in Turkey 38 times, in East Africa 12 times. Like, it's just, there's so much out there to experience, to do, to see. And Ruben, it's not just from I don't do stuff like tourists. I'm not talking about going to go see the Leaning Tower of Pisa. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the way that people interact with each other in the world, the cultures that are out there, keep you in a state of constant learning by which we never feel like we're executing in the rat race. I'm always learning something new. But to do that, you got to have the mindset of a global citizen. And the way that that translates into our real estate business, I get so many ideas from entrepreneurs around the world. Like, you know, I'm doing the real estate development stuff now in Cyprus. Mm-hmm. One of my buddies started a winery in Lebanon, and now he's giving me tidbits and concepts to potentially seed that type of idea in Cyprus where we would partner together. Where am I going to get that? Talking to someone in a coffee shop in DC? Like, you just have to get out in the world, man. So I value that so much that I have become somewhat of a global citizen, and I will always be that.
Yeah. So I've heard you talk a lot, Maurice, about kind of, you know, your background, certainly the traveling, but also, you know, in football. Yeah. And I remember hearing you talk about a difference between kind of passion and love for something, right? And how you kind of operate your life through this, you know, maybe you didn't have the passion for football, that you loved it, you loved the game, but maybe you didn't have the passion for it. So Can you talk a little bit more about the difference and how that flows through your life, how you think about what you spend your time? And then the second part of that is everybody sees Maurice Philogene now. Yeah. I want to know more about like the suck in between. I want to know more about the Saturdays or the
There was a lot nights, of that.
Right? Like we all have these kind of, you get on screen and Maurice has these great stories as he travels the world and maybe didn't have money, but tell us a little bit about those two things.
The football thing, that taught me a lot because I don't know if people know this, but so I played football in high school. I got into the Naval Academy and I turned down the Naval Academy because I wanted to go to like a regular Naval Academy is Division I, but I wanted to play with the big boys. You know what I mean? So I ended up at University of Virginia, walked on the team. I loved football in high school to the extent that it was the type of shit that on a, you know, Friday night game, if I lost, I was always crying and stuff because the game itself is what mattered to me. And I figured out later why it mattered so much. And I'll tell you that in a second. But I got to University of Virginia, played a couple games, including up at Michigan, which was dope just to be in that stadium with 100,000 fans. And then when I graduated, I tried out for the NFL. And man, I was playing at 5'10", 190. And there were dudes who were 6'5", 240 running faster than me. Like, damn, it was crazy. Like the level. But you know what I figured out, Andy? When I went to go try out for the NFL, I tried out for the NFL because it was cool. I tried out for the NFL because I was like, nah, man, I can go make some money and make a name for myself. And I quickly realized that because that was the reason I was doing it and there was not really any passion behind it, I really didn't want to go do that because it was a business. I just missed football, like itself football, because there were 11 dudes behind or in a huddle who are trying to take that ball and do a common goal with it, which is get it over the end line. That's why I love football, that passion, that being part of a team. And that re-manifested itself when I found being a police officer in 2008, because now I'm with my shift and we go into roll call and then we break roll call and then we go out on the street to achieve a common goal. I love that. That was the thing that was really hit me about football. I played tennis, I liked it, but I didn't have no teammates. And I like having teammates. I like being part of a mastermind. I like achieving larger goals. So that's kind of where the whole notion of doing shit just to do it versus doing stuff because it's truly your passion. So hopefully that answers the question about football. By the way, I loved football so much that when I was 26 years old, talk about lifestyle design, I don't think you should close out life without doing everything that you want to do. I gave the NFL another shot. I asked my company or created a dynamic by which my company let me go back to grad school part-time. And I did that, getting a master's degree in management of information systems just to get back on the football field. I missed it. I was 27 years old. I missed ball and being around people that much that I went back to play football again. That was a 3-8 season. That was rough. That was rough. Then I officially became a fan. So I love that game. In answer to your second question about the suck, if you will, I talk about it in my posts sometimes. I haven't posted about this particular topic in quite some time, but I have in the past where I talked about entrepreneurial depression. I was depressed, man, when I was doing the journey. And I just didn't know it at the time. But if you consider when I started real estate, when I was 24, 25, I was also a senior executive or an executive, a burgeoning executive at my global consulting firm. I was also in the military as a federal agent. And then I added being a police officer in 2008. So that's 97 to 2008. But then on the weekends, I was doing real estate. So it's like all the fellas was going out, hitting the clubs and stuff like that. Don't get me wrong. I partied with the best of them and I went out and from time to time. But 9 times out of 10, I was driving north or south from my house to some property that I owned. They were as far apart as 300 miles. And I got up to 35 single family homes that I was self-managing. The 2008 downturn came. You can imagine how much that slapped me in the face because it was my first downturn. And I could have filed bankruptcy. I probably should have, but I refused to because freedom, I wasn't about to give up everything that I had built. So it was hard, brother. And especially because back then there really was no internet. There was no LinkedIn. There was no Instagram for me to connect with a good dude like Ruben or to talk to you guys the way we are talking now. So all I had was the library. And then every time I would talk to my boys or my family about I'm doing this real estate or that real estate thing, nobody was doing what I was doing. I couldn't find you guys. So I was on my own doing it. But I had enough stamina that my 47-year-old self is very grateful to my 23-year-old self for just staying the course. and just not giving up. Even though I went through one or two foreclosures and I had a bunch of short sales very early in my career, all the painting and the tenants and the termites, man, I grew some very, very thick skin at the time. So when I get to 2014, 15, and I have 18 paid off homes now doing 160 grand of income, people are like, man, that's awesome. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't sleep because I was a street cop at night. I was an exec during the day and I was doing real estate on the weekend, but I refused to quit. So there's a lot of shit that people don't see. Even now, there's a lot of shit that people don't see, but it was tough. It's tough for anyone, but I call that whole thing entrepreneurial depression, which I had for a very long time.
Yeah.
Felt very alone.
In general, I think most syndicators do not display the full transparency of what happens behind, because they just post about, oh, we just took down this property, but they don't ever, you know, I think I even saw you post about this, like all of the struggles in order to get that thing across the finish line. People don't talk about that.
That's right. That's right. And there was that deal. I did post about it. It was our most recent $38 million deal. Ruben, you know what's going on. All you guys know what's going on in the debt market right now. But think about 3 months ago, as soon as the Fed pushed the rates up, the lenders got really asshole-ish, honestly. And the terms that they gave us for the for that property, 240 units in Houston, the lender came back and was like, nah, we're going to change the terms. Mm-hmm. They changed the terms at the 11th hour, and now my deal is crap. And now I got to figure out a way to hold the deal together, keep the seller at bay, keep all the investors who thought the property was going to close in October, but now it's closing in December, keeping them all happy. It was stressful for me and all the members of my team, but we made it through. And yeah, there was a lot that people don't see in the background.
All right, I have a game here. I don't know if there's anybody that's watching. It's called Cashflow 101. It talks about, there's all these players in there. There's like a doctor card, a policeman, I believe, let's see, a pilot, a lawyer, a janitor, and a teacher, and a couple other ones. And they all have to, the whole objective of this game is to help each other get out of the rat race by achieving enough passive income to pay for your liability. So I want to talk a little bit about financial freedom and reverse engineering that number that gets you free, and whether or not, you know, your goal should be to become a millionaire or just to have your lifestyle of design. Talk to us about that.
It's a good one. I think people should have both goals, but to be financially free, this notion we got to have $20 million is garbage. What you have to have is more passive income than you have expenses. That can be accomplished by doing it the way that I did, which was buying property and over time paying it down and getting to the point that you have that, or some other mechanism. But if you can figure out, to Ruben's point, if you can figure out what your monthly number is, and let's say it's $5,000 worth of expenses, then you know you need to generate $5,000 of passive income and maybe add $3,000 on top of that, because we want to live in abundance, not scarcity. You can back into the number of real estate deals or syndication deals or dividend related stocks that you need to get to accomplish that. Now, the timeline will be long. Oh, it's going to take me 9 years to generate that. So what? Took me 14. You can probably do it faster. It's just that people are so used to instant nowadays, they have zero patience to accomplish this stuff, right? It's like, nah, I got Instagram, I got Postmates, I got groceries being delivered. Like everything is instant. People don't have patience. But you can generate financial freedom that way. But I will say one other thing, Ruben, and here's the key to this whole, how I talk about trying life on and all that type of stuff. My understanding of financial freedom has certainly evolved over time. I don't want people to think that real estate or any other asset is the only way to have a lifestyle. That's wrong. You can create and design lifestyle now based off of something that you love, based off of a virtual job. Whatever it is, you don't have to sit. Anyone who's sitting brick and mortar, you're making that choice at this point. You can have a lifestyle based off time freedom, geographic freedom, and doing the things that you love. But what I profess to people is it's really important that while you live this lifestyle today, put assets on the chessboard so you can continue to live that lifestyle later when you either don't want to or physically cannot do that job. And that's where people are confusing things. They're like, no, I can't live today because I don't have any assets. No, you can orient your freedom-based lifestyle now while putting assets on the chessboard for later. So I think it's a case of either or. And I got my own version of financial freedom, and I kept working for another 8 years because my goals changed. that's when the millionaire stuff came in. That's when the, I want the 30 million because I have goals and I need to do my philanthropy work overseas. So you can have it all. It's just a matter of orienting and preparing for it.
Okay. So I want to hear about Quattro Capital. You mentioned that you were the founder of that. You have some amazing people. I believe Dr. Erin Hudson's going to be coming on the show in a couple of months. So I'm really excited to talk to her. I've never met her or talked with her. Tell us about the formation of this group and what was the intention behind it and what you guys have done.
Yeah, man. To be clear, I am one of the founders of Quattro Capital. I have four other amazing partners who all equally brought skill sets to the table to make it all happen. But it is a very interesting story. And when Erin comes on, make sure you ask her about this story. But here's how we were formed in a 60-second clip. I was at an RE Mentor conference in 2018. I knew Erin, kind of knew Erin. Erin was on stage talking about her charity in Nicaragua where she was building homes. She asked people to donate $5,000 to build a home. No one stood up. I could feel the pain on my homegirl on the stage. I decided to stand up, raise my hand, donate $5,000 on the spot. That action that I did prompted like 10 other people to donate $5,000. So she raised $55,000 in the matter of 10 minutes because I started the ball rolling. But people had good intentions anyway. We became friends, okay? And about a year later, she called me to sponsor a deal. Now, I wasn't so experienced on the multifamily side yet, but I had net worth because of my single family. I had done one or two multifamilies at the time, and I had restaurant stuff. So I had net worth, and I got this deal across the line. It was a $3 million, 36 unit in Tennessee, which we still own to this day. That deal went so well, complimentary, everyone doing their part, integrity. I like these people. Yo, these people are like family. Erin called me, or actually Erin, Chad, and Kim called me and were like, we should stay together and make a company because that was really good. Now, you know, I did that whole journey. I was very used to doing stuff on my own. So I'm like, man, I'm not doing that. But I did. And thank God I did, because here we are 30 complexes and 200 million of real estate later. That's how we all came to be. Now, here's the funny icing on the cake. Two of the people in the audience that day who raised their hand are now my Quattro partners. Chad and Kim were in the audience and they were two of the people that raised their hands. I didn't know them at the time. So we were all connected in that room and just didn't know it. That's how it formed.
That's phenomenal. I want to talk a little bit more about what you guys want to do in the future. How do you guys see the lending climate? How are you guys raising capital right now with all the crazy things going on? And I want to know if you guys are planning on staying in multifamily or getting into development or some other sub niche or self-storage or anything else like that.
Yeah, so Quattro certainly started as an affordable housing multifamily syndication shop. That is still the bread and butter of what we do because our mission is oriented around people. People being my investors, who I love. Every single one of them has my cell phone. Elon Musk is not taking my call, even though I invested a lot of money in Tesla, but every single investor I got can call me for any reason. I like multifamily because the tenants that we give the homes to is part of my own personal mission and part of Chad, Kim, Erin, and Tammy's mission to give people good, affordable housing. That said, I also have a fiduciary responsibility to my investors. So if I got to go into car washes, self-storage, overseas, I'm testing overseas investing development right now for Quattro personally. I might bring that to Quattro investors, but we will see when we get there. But right now we're sticking to affordable housing and we like it. As far as the climate, no, I love this climate because everyone's scurrying to the sideline. I ain't gonna scurry to the sideline. There's so much opportunity that is here or that is about to come. And it's gonna be the people who are prepared that have the ability to take advantage of that opportunity. My benefit is that I went through the 2008-2012 downturn and got slammed, but made it through. So when this downturn started to present itself, it was very clear what was happening. So I have a lot of cash on the side personally for opportunities. Quattro itself is leaning in the $38 million deal that we did. If that was a year earlier, we would have paid $46 million, maybe $48 million for that property easily. But we leaned in and we got an amazing deal for our investors, which we can't even keep units vacant there because there's such high demand. So no, we are leaning in. We are looking for more opportunity because people who bought property 5 years ago and their debt is adjusting now, they can't afford those debt loads. So they're going to have to sell at some level of discount And here's the benefit of something like a quattro. We've done so well in our ability to close and perform that people will give us the deal, even if we are paying less than a competitor, because they are very aware of our ability to close properties, right? My investors will benefit from that. And then of course the tenants will benefit because I'm going to improve those homes and never be a slumlord and do right by them too. So we're in this for the long haul.
How's the
question about that, Maurice? So how, you know, there's a lot of people on this call that are kind of turned off by partnerships. And so they never want to get ever back in a partnership period, right?
That's difficult.
You know, you stop dating, of course not. But I am curious about four people as principals and founding members. Talk about a little bit about the roles, because I think what we really talk a lot about here is process. And I think that's really tricky when you've got four founders. How do you kind of separate your roles?
That's good.
Abilities? And
that's
then
right.
Also, at some point, you're going to have tough conversations. So I would love to hear how you guys approach that. Ruben, you know, he chews me out all the time, so there's no problem there. But I'm curious how you guys handle it.
The tough conversations?
Tough conversations and roles and responsibilities.
Yeah. Tough conversations, we deal with that shit head on. Roles and responsibilities. When we form Quattro, we invested in ourselves. I love self-education.
Yeah, I do.
And I love personal development. So we hired a business coach. It was very important for us to hire that business coach, because when you do real estate and when you start a business, I have other businesses too beyond Quattro. When you start a business, if your business is just about money, that shit's going to fail at some point. But Quattro was never about just money. It was about helping people. It was about me achieving my own philanthropy related goals. It was about financial freedom for my boy, Chad, who was just getting out of corporate. It was about control for my partner, Tammy, who owned small businesses that were driving her insane. There was reasons behind starting Quattro Capital. Now, we all have complementary skills from different places. Chad came from General Electric for years. Kim ran billion-dollar accounts in the corporate space. I came from Accenture, a global consulting firm, and the military, and being a police officer, so very A personality type. Tammy joined a little bit later, but man, she is such the middle. She's kind of the glue in between doing operations. And then I have Aaron. So here's the responsibilities. Me and Aaron handle investor relations. I used to find property all the time. I don't want to do that no more. I did that for 20 years. I'm tired, honestly. What I like is helping people, hence my police officer background and nature and stuff like that. I like talking to my investors about their financial freedom, time freedom, geographic freedom, purpose, and relationship goals, and how I can help them get that through Quattro. I am talking to investors all the time. I love it because I can help them get to financial freedom and a design life faster than I got to mine, and Quattro is a great tool. Same thing for Erin, who's a mother of five and a grandmother of, I don't know, but she looks like she's 32 years old. But Erin was a chiropractor, is a chiropractor. She was running her own business, and it was taking up all of her time freedom. But how much credibility does she have to be able to speak to potential investors of how real estate has changed her life? So her and I handle investor relations together. Chad does acquisitions because he has a rocket scientist mind. I cannot explain the financial expertise and guru-ness of this dude. I don't need to get into his lane. He knows exactly what he's doing. Kim runs asset management. I'm not talking about property manager. Property management is running a property. Asset management is managing the investment. Kim handles our portfolio with our support. Tammy runs operations and what we call transitions, but essentially operations. Insurance, loan processing, SEC compliance, W-9 creation, like all the inner workings and the inner glue. That's my homegirl, Tammy. I call her the team mama. She is the team mama. She's always on me, like I'm in some other part of the world, and she's like, yo, I need a limited power of attorney because you're leaving and we have to do this closing. She's always on me about something. We all have our lanes. We all have our wants and desires, and why Quattro Capital is happening for us, not to us. I didn't build another 9-to-5. That's not what I built. What I built is something that's going to help us achieve our own individual goals. That's how we go about it, is we are in our lanes because of the things that we want to do, and it all works, and we are very communicative about it. And lastly, it's a virtual company, but I see my partners at least 4 times a year, if not more. They're my family. And I will tell you, we are a family that's operating as a company, not a company that purports to be a family. Those are my people. And my investors feel that. So if someone's like, yo, come do this deal with me and be my partner on this thing, I'm like, nah, I'm good. I got my family already. I'm good.
So talk to us a little bit about the the conversations that you're having with your investors, because it doesn't sound like you're telling them too much about returns. It sounds like you're diving into their problems, the things that they want to accomplish, the freedoms that they might be seeking to achieve. Mm-hmm. Tell mm-hmm. me about that, because I think that's something that a lot of people miss when they're having communications and having conversations with people. It's not about the deal or the team. It's about, you know, what are the pain points? Like, do you want to be spending more time on a beach, or do you want to be traveling the world, or do you want to have, I think yeah. you mentioned that financial freedom equals time plus mobility, right?
Yes, it does. There's a lot of different definitions for it, but financial freedom does equal time plus mobility. It's one of those posts that I did, Ruben, on LinkedIn when I was talking about ARR and IIR, and people are so stuck on measurements. Measurements are good as a comparison tool, but they are not the ultimate outcome of what people are looking for. What people are looking for is lifestyle and achieving their goals. Now, if I have a deal that return 17%, but achieve someone's goal because of where it is and what have you, they're going to take that deal instead of something that gets 19%, but there are some intrinsic goals not met. I don't like when people ask me, who is Quattro like? What company do you consider a competitor? I don't consider any company a competitor to Quattro. I could care less what other companies are doing, honestly. Because the outcomes of the investors is all that matters. Some people are investing, I won't say her last name, but her name is Rachel. She had $1 million of equity in her home. She's never invested in anything ever. And she didn't know how to prepare for the future. So me spending time with her was not about the average rate of return as much as it was about deploying and employing her capital to do something good for her family. I'm having dinner with her next Thursday with like 5 other new investors. My investors are my family, because that money that they are investing in my deal, it ain't money. It's all the time that they use to create it over the years. Mm. I think about it differently when I think that a lot of people, I'm going to go raise money. Man, I got 20 million. What am I going to do with this? No, you ain't got 20 million. You have $20 million worth of time that people put to create that piece of paper. We approach it different in that this stuff affects people's lives. Because we do, we have very good loyalty. Probably 70% of our investors have repeated with us, and that number is rising. I love it. I love what I do.
That's a really powerful metric. I think when people ask me, how do you vet sponsors? One of the main things that I'm looking for is, what's the investor experience that that sponsor mm-hmm. is providing? And mm-hmm. one of the greatest metrics to determine that is, what is the retention rate of their investors? How many of them are coming back? Because some investors, or some sponsors better said, they can provide a fantastic return, but they're not providing a great experience, and they're donating investors to the next guy who's finding out more about their needs and then being more responsive in terms of communication with them and providing a yeah. white glove investor service.
Ruben, my first deal in multifamily, I passively invested $100,000 in somebody's deal. I won't say the person's name. That $100,000 turned into $232,000 in 19 months. Phenomenal, right? Their communication was shit. And their care of me as a person was terrible. I never invested with them again, even though I made that money. I will never invest with those people again, because I was treated like a piece of paper. I don't treat my investors like a piece of paper. I treat them like the flesh and blood that they actually are. They're going to keep coming back. And I'll give you a good example. This can't always happen. You know, sometimes people will call and be like, they run into a financial emergency and they need some of their capital back, but they know very well that this is a hard asset and it's hard to get money out of it. But I busted my hump to find someone who might be willing to replace this person's money so they could get it back, because they were having an emergency in their family that I could not stop thinking about. So we found a way to replace this person's money in about a month, and it helped them in their life. They'll come back later and invest. I can't always do that, but that's what I mean about treating people humanly, not humanely, but humanly.
Legacy acquisitions.
They are people. Like, it's not investors, it's people. So I know that, you know, as you scale, you can't do that at scale for every little thing, but that's the key. I don't need to scale. Quattro's doing just fine being boutique, if you will, and taking care of our investors. I'd rather be good to people, man, and make way more money. I'm not really interested in that.
Can you just talk about, because I think we're going to take some questions, right, Ruben?
Yeah.
We can take some questions from the group. What is Tri Life On? What does that mean? I just want to hear like a couple minute thing on it. What does that mean?
This thing.
And then also maybe in that 2.5 minutes, I think, before we ask questions, hidden moons. I also want to know what that means, because I don't know what that means either.
What is?
Hidden Wounds.
I might actually, I'll represent her well, but my homegirl Nicole is here. Try Life On. Try Life On is a mindset, a skill set, and a soul set. It is a philosophy of life that we all graduated from 20 years of formal education with a certain set of rules by which we are supposed to live. I never believed in those rules, ever. I never believed, or at least I developed a non-belief that my job on this planet was to go into the corporate life and be an analyst, then a consultant to manager, manager to senior manager to partner. That's somebody else's version of what I'm supposed to do. You can try life on in many, many ways. If you want to, and there are principles related to try life on, like and versus or. The notion, yo, Mo, you cannot be a senior executive, federal agent, street cop, and real estate investor at the same time. Really? I did. You can't travel to all these countries when you don't have money. I did. How'd you do that? I went to the library and I started reading travel hacking books and I figured it out. The problem with what we do in society today is there is a lot of societal pressure coming from our neighbors, our coworkers, our family to exist the way that things have always been done. And I just refused. So my 25 year journey has been everything from, and I'm not talking about just dipping my toe in stuff. I'm talking about doing things for the long term. I was a street cop for 15, all at the same time, street cop for 15 years, federal agent for 22 years, senior executive for 25 years, real estate investor for 26 years, part-time actor for 18 years. Who says you can't do A, B, and C? The reason I could do A, B, and C is because I did things like protect my time. Instead of waste time at networking events and posturing to try and make partner, I protected that time to have other experiences in life such that when I punch off this planet, my book, my life book is full. That's what I want. Life experience. And I will add this one last piece because it's very difficult to explain the whole philosophy in just a couple of phrases. But this one last thing, you can practice life. Life is to be practiced, practiced. So I am very good at, I don't have, today is Tuesday. I don't have a ticket. You know what? I'm going to travel hack tomorrow. I'm going to get on a plane. I'm going to go to Arctic Finland tomorrow. I know how to do it. I've been doing it so long that it's so easy. When someone says, why are you going to Turkey this weekend? And I'm like, I'm just going to go to my favorite city and read a book. Like, that's crazy. You're going on vacation? You're going to spend all that money? I'm like, no. You go to Walmart. I go to another country and I read a book. Well, we don't do that. That's not what, how do you do that? Well, that's what society keeps telling you. So it is a philosophy on how to live life to the fullest. And So Try Life On is a bit of a brand. I coach under it. There's a podcast that's coming out under it. There are some TV projects that are coming out under it. My goal is to help people build a mindset, give them the skill set, and hopefully help them develop the soul set to try life on their way, because everybody can have a lifestyle you do not need a vacation from. I don't take vacations anymore. My life is a vacation. It's exactly what I want. But it took me time to design that life. So I'm trying to share with people all the things and skills and resources and relationships that I've used over the years to try life on. And that's what it is.
I hadn't heard great about stuff, that. Man. That's very cool. All right. Yeah. Did you mention something about wounds? What was that, Andy?
Is Nicole? Maybe
she is. Get my girl, Nicole. Let me see if she'll chat with us real quick.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. There
she is. Hey, Nicole. So we're putting you on the spot here. Maurice referenced Hidden Wounds earlier and some of the work that you're doing. We'd love to hear about it if you're okay with sharing.
Sure. Yeah. First, this has been such a great experience. The last hour, definitely I've learned so much. Thank you so much for inviting me. I've been on a long journey myself, as many of you, a different journey as a veteran spouse, military spouse, spent 20 years in the military community and have seen a lot, pros and cons of the life. But as a filmmaker, I really wanted to highlight the fact that when folks come back from combat, trauma, you know, just experiencing things that you and I just can't fathom, those hidden wounds are there. If they had all their limbs, there's still something that's hidden. But along this journey, filming Hidden Wounds, but now it's called Resilience, Hidden Wounds is just part of the story. We're really trying to communicate that it is a different life. You know, a small percentage of the population serves in this country, but these men and women are just exemplify extraordinary strength and have given such an extraordinary contribution for us. I really wanted to, you know, kind of connect the dots between the civilian community and the military community so that there can be more understanding about hidden wounds, about the military journey, about how resilient and amazing military folks are, veteran folks are, because it's just one story. Hidden wounds is just part of the story. So
that
was fun. But stay tuned, because I will be hosting a promo soon, just a short promo. And the film, I'm hoping, will be done by the end of the year. So
nice. Very cool. Yeah, let's open it up. Who wants to? So Derek, I know that you talk about some of the same things that Maurice does, right? So I asked you in the chat about the different freedoms that you talk about, and they're very similar to Maurice's. What question do you have for Maurice? I'd love to hear yours.
A lot of what Maurice is doing, I really look up to Maurice and his team a lot, just because there's a lot of similarities. And it seems like, Maurice, you've walked down this path for a lot longer and have done this for a while and have some repeated success on this. What would you say to those who are maybe just starting out, right? And maybe are working a full-time job and just learning about entrepreneurism? You know, what type of messaging do you send to those types of folks who are, you know, just looking for maybe inspiration or a different way, or who just are starting out from scratch? Like, do you even work with those people? How do you kind of message it for them?
First of all, thank you for saying those kind words, brother. I appreciate it. And I'm glad that that type of messaging is getting through. The people I work with under the Try Life On flag or whatever, executives who are trying to change their life or entrepreneurs who are just trying to get started, et cetera, I tell them, what's the goal? Like, I'm all for real estate, Derek. Real estate has helped me in many ways. I'm on my third real estate life now. The first one was single family to get my financial freedom, and that I did that. The second one is the Quattro stuff to help other people get their financial freedom and achieve my own philanthropy goals, because I do stuff in the Mideast. I'm doing that. And then my third real estate life is developing real estate in the Mediterranean. And that has zero to do with money, everything to do with creating this lifestyle between the US and the Mediterranean. I did that. All this stuff that we're doing, man, is for a goal. People are getting money confused with a goal. It's not money. It's a goal that you are trying to achieve. So when people are like, yo, I'm going to get into syndicating, my first question is like, why? Why do you want to do that? Because if you are doing it because Mo is doing it or because Ruben does it, then you're no different than the cat that is trying to be the executive VP at the company just because. It's the same shit. But if you are doing it because you're trying to, quote unquote, secure financial and time freedom, that's a why that I like. Mm-hmm. If you're doing it, I'm gonna do this large scale stuff because I'm gonna change the financial trajectory of my family's generations. That's the real thing to go after. If you're doing it because you wanna get out of the office, and I tell people this, do real estate. When you do it, secure your basic needs first. Do that. Secure your basic needs, because when you secure your basic needs, you give yourself time freedom. When you give yourself time freedom, you give yourself ability to plug into life and plan it as intended, and also do the things that you are passionate about. You're seeing me all over the place right now because I have time. I can. But real estate did that, right? So that's the thing that I tell people, whether they're first starting, and I work with people who are first starting lifestyle design, real estate, whatever it is, to very senior people who are like, I have one coaching student. She makes $12 million a year. She's miserable. And believe it or not, at $12 million a year, she's living paycheck to paycheck.
Wow.
It's the goal, man. So we're reorienting her life. We are getting junk assets off the chessboard. She's moving from an in-office job to a virtual job. You are right, Angel, total lifestyle creep. But I can help her reorient, just like I can help the college student, my son, design his life right out of college so he never works in corporate if he doesn't want to. If he wanted to, I'd be happy, but he wants to be a bodybuilder. So we reverse engineered his life that way. The long story short, Derek, is what's the goal of all of it? That's what I always try and get people to orient around, and then we can figure out what to do from there.
Corey Singleton's got his hand up.
Yes, Maurice, thank you so much. Just your message, man. I definitely resonated with it a lot. Me being myself as a military officer in the reserves, and then also working government contract, doing IT and stuff like that. So pretty familiar with the center as well. So I got two questions. My first question is, how do you hold your value so close to you in a world full of mediocrity?
Damn, man, you hit me right in the eyes with that one.
Mm-hmm.
I like the deep talk, brother.
Yeah, I feel you. How do I hold my values in a world full of mediocrity. I'm gonna thank my dad for that, because my family is an immigrant family. We're from Haiti. And my father, where he grew up in Haiti, in the north of the island, pretty much, you know, no heat, no clothes, no shoes. And he got to the US and he gave me and my brother a chance. And he always instilled education and values. You know, I seen my dad cry one time his whole life. And it was when I was at a friend's house. He busted his ass to get me into a private school. And I went over a friend's house and I stole money out of his sister's purse. I was like 13, 14 years old or something. And they called my father, and my father went over there and he was crying. And he explained to me that everything that he did to give me a chance, and I was about to screw it up. Man, if you've never seen your father cry and you see him cry that one time, my dad didn't cry when my grandmother passed away, because he's such a religious person. That's just her moving on into something better. But I have values, and they were continued through the military days, as you know, and then they continued into my police life, as you know, and I have a very innate internal compass. Oh, shoot. Yesterday, I accidentally scraped my neighbor's car on the street, and it was killing me, because I'm like, nah, I got to put my phone number on their car because I don't want them thinking that I would ever try to take advantage of somebody. And that stuff just comes from internal. I don't need values externally. I'm not interested in external validation. I don't need titles. I don't need none of that. But it all starts with how my dad raised me, and I'm happy for that.
So what advice would you go back and tell your 27-year-old self?
I would not change my journey. I would not change my journey, but I would change one particular thing. That entrepreneurial depression stuff that I talk about, it's because I didn't find my tribe. I was doing so much on my own and taking on so much of the stress and the burden and the, I got nobody to talk to. I got nobody to unload to. That's why when I talked to Nicole about the military stuff, like everything came out, right? Because I was remembering so much that I had on my shoulders. The thing that I would change is I would find my tribe very early. I found them too late. I found them too late, man. So find people like this. Like you're on this thing with 15 participants. Clearly the people here are of like mind to some extent. They saw lifestyle design. They saw financial freedom. They're here. So there are people thinking the way that we are all thinking. Find them.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah, real quick question, Maurice. Thanks a lot for all the wisdom and for helping us out here, especially with perspective and mindset that drives everything we do. So it's super, super important.
Right on.
I wanted to ask you, you know, while you're traveling and while you've set up this incredible business and incredible vision and purpose for you and your team, what role does setting up internal systems play?
Oh, everything.
Okay. And so how do you approach building them?
I am a student of the 4-Hour Workweek. That book on LinkedIn, anytime I post books, it's the same 5 books. In the 4-Hour Workweek, we talked about automation, elimination, and outsourcing. I have learned over time to outsource, automate, eliminate. From a business perspective, automation is everything. I have zero interest in brick and mortar. None. So no brick and mortar. I'll run down some tools. We virtualize our mail with Earth Class Mail. We have channels within Slack related to asset management and going after properties. We are now using Vidyard with respect to videos so we can see investors' reactions to things that we do. We use a portal, obviously, to manage our investors. People come into play. We have awesome CPA. We have a CFO who helps us plan out into the future. Our legal team is no joke. You have to, that's the outsourcing part. I don't want to do that stuff. I used to do everything on my own. No. You take the phrase, put aces in their places. Find the right people. Find the people. Just like I know Ruben is an ace in its place for people who are looking for capital, right? So Ruben is an ace. I go find aces, or I put tools in place, or I eliminate things outright such that my business supports my lifestyle. I don't want my lifestyle to be my business. Not interested, if that makes sense. So yeah, automation plays a huge role.
You know, I'm reading about Coach Wooden again, and to Singleton's question earlier, maybe the most important thing that he ever taught or got was from his dad. And I think about that a lot of my life, that, you know, we were raised with like a plastic spoon, because everything was credit and debt and the whole thing. We never had any money, right? But what they did give me was discipline. I had a mom who was a teacher and dad who was a coach. They gave me discipline and work ethic and integrity, right? Those things in real estate are probably the most important thing. Eventually, you got to change your mindset. But I think the most important thing that his father passed down to him was to be true to yourself. And I think that's how you survive in kind of a mediocre world, right? Because we all, probably today, I lied to myself at least two or three times, right? I do want to hear you kind of wrap up with that. Like, what in your early days did you have to kind of deal with in lying to yourself about why you weren't in the place that you wanted to be, why you couldn't have this job and that job? At some point, there became some kind of clarity that I'm going to change my life and I'm going to do whatever it takes to have that design for myself. So, you know, take us out with that.
I got lucky. That trip that I told you about when I was 15 showed me that the world is bigger than Boston and all the shit that I see on TV and on the billboards that told me to get beepers, clothes, a dope car, sneakers, and shit like that. Because it plugged me into the world in a way that most people will never feel. And I mean feel, the word feel in quotes. I was feeling, right? I was the hard-headed hood kid. And then I felt something. And then I found financial stuff when I was 21. And then I realized if I can buy assets that create revenue that doesn't require my presence, I can go back and have those feelings whenever I want. So when people started, like, I felt it in the military, I felt it in corporate, and I even felt it in the police department. The pressure to get a title. It was so inorganic to me because I was like, that's just artificial. Like, that's validation. That's not feeling and that's not connecting to the world. There's nothing wrong with it if it's your thing, but it was being put on me as the goal. I didn't like that shit. Even when I became a police officer, they found out what I was doing in the military because I was a federal agent and a special agent in charge. And I was running field offices all over the world. And I get to be in a patrol officer. And they're like, why you don't become a lieutenant or a captain or a chief of police? Because I have the credentials to do it. I don't want to be a chief of police. I just want to be in the roll call room with the fellas and the ladies and go out and eat terrible McDonald's at 3 o'clock in the morning and drink beer on a Friday with my team and go do good things for people in the neighborhood and stuff like that. Somewhere along the line, I was given... People try to impart all these rules on us. This applies in real estate too. People try and impart all these damn rules on us on how we are supposed to live, how we are supposed to do real estate. Oh, you're supposed to have 2,000 units. Oh, you're supposed to raise as much money as Ruben. No, you do shit that makes the most sense for your life. And I developed a bit of resilience over time towards all the societal noise of stuff. And I was being very quiet from 97 to 2019. When I was doing all this stuff and gaining all this skill and traveling this way and making friends with people all over the world. And it's just now that I'm being vocal because a friend of mine was like, Mo, I know you like to help people, but I'm calling you on your bullshit. You're not telling anyone about all these journeys, all these principles you've developed, all these things that you can give to people so they can go plug into life and planet as intended. You are being an ass to the rest of the community, which you can help. So I started speaking about it. But It wasn't a pivot, man. It was a gradual disdain for what society was telling me to do. And especially as a brother, especially as a brown or black person in our community, and you're supposed to go be the athlete. I don't want to be the athlete. I like being on the team, but I like the team concept, not the athlete concept, you know? I just developed a certain level of disdain for the way people were telling me to live my life. And as we know, since this is a real estate conversation, real estate has an enormous amount of economic empowerment that can make you confident to go live the way that you want to live. That is the purpose of real estate. It is not money. It is so you can go do shit, like heavy stuff, you know? So I didn't pivot as much as I developed this mindset over time. I added the skill set. And you guys damn sure know I have the soul set and the heart set to kind of think and operate my life this way. And I've just never looked back. And I'm not looking for acceptance. I'm not looking for validation. I'm honestly looking to help people as much as possible. And I'll wrap up by saying, here's the goal of all this. At some point, I'm going to punch off this planet. And I know that if a lot of people are bothered when they hear that I've passed away, then I've done good. That's all I'm after. Hey, remember that dude, Mo? Yeah, man, he responded to my house. He wrapped that burglar out of my house, or he responded to my business because we had a problem. when he was a cop, or yeah, he was my commander in the military. He was a good dude to me. Or my investor was like, my God, he helped me create $500,000 out of thin air. And I sent my kids to college. And oh, sucks, he's passed. Let me think about him for a while. Like, you know, you've done good. That's my North Star. Like all this other shit, like you gotta have this money and this car and this title and all that. Not even close to worrying about that stuff, man. So it wasn't much as a pivot as much as this stuff has just been building inside of me for some time. And now I find amazing humans like you who are thinking the same way, and it's even more empowering.
Very good stuff. I'm actually shocked that more people are not really focused on the mindset and the energy behind the creation of things. Seems like a lot of people are very money driven these days, and it's kind of sad, to be completely honest. But this has been a blast, man. For the people that do connect with this message, thank you for showing up. This has been really cool. And Maurice, we got to hang out a little bit more often, man. It better be like 2.5 years before I see you next
Right. time. It's good to see you again, man. I appreciate you, brother.
All right, cool, man. With that, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you guys so much.
Appreciate it, man.